Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. There were 81 hate crimes investigated in Pennsylvania, according to the latest data from the FBI that was in 2020. That's almost double from the number reported in 2019. The FBI defines a hate crime as a criminal offense against a person or property motivated in whole or in part by an offender's bias against race, religion, disability, sexual orientation, ethnicity, gender, or gender identity. The increase in Pennsylvania follows a trend from across the country, where hate crimes increased to levels not seen since 2008. Why are hate crimes up, and what can be done to stop them? Joining us is Shira Goodman, Regional Director of the Anti-Defamation League Philadelphia, which covers all of eastern Pennsylvania, South Jersey, and Delaware. Ms. Goodman, welcome to the program. There are some questions about the accuracy of these numbers, which we'll get into in just a few minutes. But why do you think there were more hate crimes last year?
Well, thanks for having me. I think that the numbers show a few things. They do show a steady uptick over the last number of years, and we do need to look at that. They also probably show better reporting. So these numbers from the FBI are just one data point. We need to look at other data as well. And frankly, we do believe that hate crimes are underreported. And that's something that we need to talk about, both because of victims having mistrust of the police, fear of repercussions for reporting, belief that something might not happen, as well as different law enforcement jurisdictions having different methods of reporting, not having uniformity there. And those are things we're working on both in Pennsylvania and at the national level. When the numbers go up, it's not always bad news. It does also mean that law enforcement agencies are investigating and prosecuting these offenses and are understanding the special nature of them and how impactful they are, not only on individual victims, but on whole communities.
And we'll talk probably a lot about these numbers and how accurate they are. But getting back to my original question, whether we go by the FBI numbers or some other resources, that the numbers are up. And as you said, they have been up in six of the last 7 years across the country. Why do you think it's happening?
I think that people who harbor hate, whether it's racial animus, hatred towards immigrants, hatred based on somebody's religion, ethnicity, sexual orientation, or gender identity, those folks have become more emboldened. I don't know that there's necessarily more of them across the country who harbor these attitudes, but I think they've become more emboldened. It's been less shameful to act out on these things. And when we have times of uncertainty, economic uncertainty, political divisiveness, the uncertainty caused by a global pandemic, we see fear and ignorance often overtake good sense and the better natures of people. And so I think all those things together have made a perfect storm. And frankly, in the last number of years, we've had leaders and elected officials who have encouraged hateful rhetoric. And we know that hate speech, which is certainly protected, unfortunately, but it is protected speech, can often lead to hate actions. And so you have to interrupt hate at the very beginnings when you see bias, when you see speeches, when you see slurs. And when that's encouraged, it allows and emboldens people who harbor those beliefs to act on them.
When obviously what you just listed shows that there is no one answer to this question, but something that has changed that you listed was that many of these people who are committing these crimes have been become emboldened. And then you also said that we've had some rhetoric from national leaders that, you know, and I guess my question is, has that rhetoric emboldened these people?
I think it has. I don't think we can blame one person or one leader. And I certainly don't think that people, if people felt that just having a change in administration was going to change this data, I think that that was, a misunderstanding of how hate works and how we as people and our psychologies work. You know, hate is a product of many things, fear of the other, wanting to elevate the in-group over the out-group, scapegoating people. And it doesn't just go back in a box. So many people think it would be better if these numbers were very low. We didn't know what was happening. Hate was kind of in the dark corners of the internet. At the ADL, we want to know what's happening. We think the best way to fight hate is to know where it is, to combat it with anti-hate speech, anti-hate education, coalition building, allyship. And so although the data is concerning, we also think it's really important to understand it. We want to know what's happening on our campuses, what's happening in schools, what's happening on the street. And we want people to feel safe to report. We have seen, if you look at Stop AAPI Hate's data, it's probably much higher than the FBI's data on anti-Asian Pacific Islander crimes in the last year and a half. And they keep, in fact, updating their data, showing more and more people now willing to report things that happened last year since the beginning of COVID. So we need to empower communities to let them know that they are safe to report to law enforcement, that they will be taken seriously, that these incidents will be investigated, and that they will be safe in reporting. And those of us who are safer need to stand up for our allies and neighbors and say this is unacceptable. And if we witness something, we need to also be willing to stand up for them and report.
What you're referring to is Asian Americans, Asian Pacific Islanders, that last year, the number of hate crimes where they were targeted went up, according to the FBI statistics, over 250. But according to the organization that you mentioned, like 2,200 across the country. That's a big disparity, and that gets back to these numbers that we're talking about. And I don't want to get bogged down in the numbers, but that does tell a story. The FBI relies on local law enforcement agencies to report hate crimes to them. And I don't know whether the ADL, but I know the NAACP, which we had scheduled to be on the program today, and hopefully we're going to have someone from the organization a little bit later in the program. Anyway, that everyone kind of looks at these numbers from the FBI and say, wait, they're way off. We know there are more hate crimes than what is being reported to the FBI. Do you agree with that?
I definitely do. There are hundreds of big cities across the United States of populations of over 100,000 who affirmatively report zero hate crimes. Now, that could be because of how they're defined. That could be that they don't understand. That could be they label them as something else. And even if you look at this year's data compared to last year's, a big change in that 40 to the 80 range is Philadelphia's reporting changed a lot from last year to this year and is more in line with 2018, 2017. And that could have to do with a change in administration, a change in software, a change in how things are reported. But we do believe that cities are affirmatively reporting zero, and it just can't be, because we hear about complaints about anti-Semitism and different forms of bias. Certainly the NAACP does, Stop AAPI Hate. We hear about things, and we've been working at the ADL with lots of community groups, community partners. We've done programs with many district attorneys and police agencies to talk to communities that are highly impacted, to talk about what a hate crime is, what a hate incident is, something that might be hateful but maybe isn't a crime because it's protected speech or it doesn't rise to the level of criminal activity, and what people should do and how they should be supported. We've translated a lot of our resources this year to make sure people know how they can report safely. But we definitely think it's underreported. And one of the things we want to do is educate law enforcement jurisdictions about the special nature of these crimes, how to deal with the communities affected, how to deal with the victims, but also talk to the communities, empower them, whether that's through churches or civic groups or consulates, so that people know how to report and can be safe conduits for people who might just be afraid.
Well, you talked about educating law enforcement agencies. Again, across the country, there are 400 fewer local law enforcement agencies that reported, period. And we're not just talking about that reported zero, like you mentioned, of cities over 100,000 that reported zero hate crimes. 400 fewer law enforcement agencies reported. So that makes me wonder, are those local law enforcement agencies taking this seriously, and do they recognize what a hate crime is?
I mean, that's a, so two questions. One is, do they recognize what a hate crime is? Now, you started with the federal definition of hate crimes. In Pennsylvania, not all those categories are actually protected under our ethnic intimidation statute. We've been working with a coalition against hate, and Representative Frankel and Senator Acosta have been introducing bills session after session to expand our law in Pennsylvania to ensure that hate crimes that are targeting people because of sexual orientation, gender identity, gender expression, and disability are covered. They're not right now. So there could be that confusion among law enforcement jurisdictions. Also, if you don't, you know, sometimes with these laws, it's a carrot and a stick. They're asking for jurisdictions to affirmatively participate, but can they incentivize it? Are there repercussions if you don't? And those are things we have to depend on both Congress and the state legislature to do. Can we set up better incentives? If you participate, you're going to have money to for the software needed to track this. You're going to have the training for that. So that gets into, you know, how we pass laws, how we incentivize behavior. But I think that more and more people are realizing and recognizing that this is an issue, and we do need to hold both law enforcement accountable, but also the legislators who are funding them to make sure that they have the tools and the resources to do it.
So most of the hate crimes that were reported, at least to the FBI, were targeting African Americans here in Pennsylvania and really across the country. A big increase in Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders being targeted last year. Actually, Jewish people and properties, according to the FBI statistics, the number of hate crimes that were targeting Jews, that was down. So what do you make of that?
I mean, it's interesting. The ADL does an audit of anti-Semitic incidents every year. We've been doing it for 40 years. We count criminal and non-criminal activity. We also saw a slight decrease in 2020, but not to the extent that the FBI did. And the FBI's data obviously is kind of aggregate data, so we can't do an apples to apples comparison. We don't know if it, Jewish people generally have less apprehension about reporting hate crimes to police, less fear of police, less concern about whether issues with immigration status, things like that. So we think this is really interesting. Again, we have seen an uptick in our reporting and our counting of anti-Semitic incidents over the last number of years as well, which track with the FBI data. Again, it's hard to know. It's only one data point. We use lots of other things in addition to the audit. We measure hate online. We ask Jewish people in America about their experiences of anti-Semitism, and more people are saying they feel unsafe or have experienced or witnessed anti-Semitism. And we also do surveys of American attitudes towards Jews to kind of track who harbors anti-Semitic attitudes. And again, we've seen, as I said at the beginning, the numbers of people that we would say harbor anti-Semitic attitudes has been decreasing, but the number of incidents we're tracking has increased. So again, we don't think the numbers of people who hate and who hold racial animus, anti-Semitic views, et cetera, are increasing, but people have been emboldened. We're gonna, you know, dig more into this data and see how it tracks with ours. But we certainly are hearing from Jews across Pennsylvania and America that they feel less safe than they have in the past.
When we're talking about hate crimes, yes, I gave that FBI definition of a hate crime, but in practical terms, what does a hate crime look like?
So you actually need an underlying crime. So I want people to understand we're not criminalizing speech or thought. We're talking about actual criminal activity. So it could be arson, vandalism, assault, criminal harassment. So an existing crime in the criminal statutes. But what's different here is that the victim was targeted because of one of those protected categories that you mentioned: race, ethnicity, religion, sexual orientation, gender identity, gender. And there's got to be some evidence of that, whether that's something that the attacker said, whether there's some context, whether there's something left, or whether there was writing left, if it's a vandalism case. And it usually will lead to, if it can be prosecuted and proven a sentencing enhancement. But again, it's not that somebody doesn't like Jews or said something racist. Those things are protected. We may not like them. We have to do, and we do at the ADL, the educational work to try to root that out. But that's not criminal. It's when you commit a crime and are targeting the person based on some protected characteristic.
Isn't there some wiggle room there, though, when you talk about protected speech? I mean, there are times where a hate crime is reported. In fact, I looked at these statistics, and it said that, some of them involve violence, but there were others that where someone on the street would be attacked verbally, because of their ethnicity or their religion or their sexual orientation or identity. So isn't there some wiggle room in the law?
Well, there is, but it depends if a prosecutor is going to prosecute that. So if it's somebody just shouting something out a car window, that's probably not going to get prosecuted as a hate crime, and we would probably call it a hate incident. But if somebody is on the street berating somebody, screaming at somebody, making it difficult for them to pass, and it could rise up to the level of harassment, and I'm not a criminal attorney, then that might be something that could be prosecuted that way. We've seen in the last year people coughing on people, people assaulting people of Asian descent, blaming them for the virus. We've seen a lot of memes like that and things online, again, protected speech. But when they cross into actual criminal activity, vandalism on private property, unwanted touching and harassment that fits the criminal definitions, that could be a hate crime. But that's why a lot of these things are reported as hate crimes, but may not get prosecuted. And that's a decision that the DAs and the police work out. And sometimes that's very upsetting to the community members. They don't understand why they've had such an impact on them and something's not being prosecuted. And certainly police and prosecutors want to make their cases. They want to have strong cases. And so my understanding is that law enforcement reports cases even if they don't get fully prosecuted or convicted as hate crimes. So there is some wiggle room, but the law is pretty clear. You need an underlying crime for there to be a hate crime.
Let's take a phone call from Jaina in Gettysburg. Jaina, you're on Smart Talk.
Yes. The Adams County Human Relations Council has been dealing with a harassment situation that's been going on for several years of a neighbor stopping just short of criminal activity against a Latino family. And the police say they can't do anything. The Human Relations Commission in Harrisburg can't do anything because it is not criminal acts that we're dealing with. But how can we deal with this kind of situation? We would like to protect this family, but there seems to be no avenue to correct the situation.
Jaina, before Ms. Goodman answers your question, let me ask you another question. When you say Latino families being harassed in what way?
All kinds of names and filthy language, stones being placed in their driveway, just simply yelling at filthy language toward little kids and the grandkids in the family. I mean, it's just an ongoing situation of verbal hatred.
Mm-hmm. So, Shira Goodman, what Jaina describes, that certainly sounds like harassment. But if it doesn't rise to the level, if the police say it doesn't rise to the level of criminal act, what recourse is there?
Yeah, thanks for the question, and thanks for being a supportive neighbor and friend. It does sound like harassment, and I'm a little surprised from some of the things you're describing that the police are saying it isn't, but perhaps, you know, they need more evidence and pictures and writing up some of these things, and witnesses from outside the family would be helpful. But also the support that you're giving, sometimes countering this with anti-hate speech, with signs and notes and making sure the family knows. And, you know, even the signs like Kate has no home here, things like that are good counters to this. It's very frustrating. It's very upsetting. We often get calls from people who somebody in their neighborhood will put up a racist sign or swastika flag, you know, immigrants go home, something like that. And people want to do a petition. They want the township to take it down, which they can't because it's private property and protected. But what we usually say is we counsel people to put up counter signs. We say the township can put up a welcoming message on its website and put up its own signs. And I think speaking out that way, it's sometimes a little harder. We always want there to be an easy solution, but I think they're lucky they have friends and neighbors like our caller. And I would continue to talk to the Bureau of Cultural Affairs at the Pennsylvania State Police and the local police and the Human Relations Commission together should be able to find some ways to support this family.
But sure, just what you described with putting up signs or, you know, that the neighbors showing support for this family, isn't there potential to ramp up the harassment because the people who are doing the harassing see it as a call to arms? And I hate to use that terminology, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's possible, but I would encourage people to think that maybe, you know, that's kind of letting the bully win, right?
Because right.
You're worried
yeah.
It might inflame them more. The support and the strength it might give to the target here, it might be worth it. And there might be other people like our caller who are feeling frustrated and upset and ashamed of their neighborhood and maybe now know that they have an ally in this caller. And so I think that strength, sometimes somebody speaking up can give others the strength to do so as well. And I think that's helpful.
Jana, thank you very much for your call. But Jana's question raises a point. What do you do, even as a bystander or as someone who has been targeted, what do you do to report a hate crime or hate?
So I'll, there's a couple things. If you see it online, all of our online platforms, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, they have terms of service and reporting mechanisms, and you should report things on there. If you feel safe, if it's somebody you know and you feel like you can call it out and talk about what's wrong with it, you should do that. You can always call the ADL. We don't just handle anti-Semitism. We guide people through lots of other kinds of incidents. If we think it needs to go to law enforcement, we can help liaise with that and we'll get you to the right folks. You can call law enforcement as well. Many, many times I've heard, especially over the last year and a half, from prosecutors, from police captains, that they want to hear about these incidents, even if they might not rise to the level of a crime, because a pattern or practice in the same area with the same perpetrators may lead to something that could be filed that way, like what the caller was just describing. So speaking out, you always want to be safe in doing that. But if you feel safe to speak out and speak up to question, what did you mean by that? That's not been my experience. Why would you say that? That's very hurtful. Sometimes that's enough. We often, you know, at the ADL, we've had to call out a lot of elected officials for their language, for sharing memes, for things that they've written that have become public. And we need to hold them accountable. Again, there is the issue of free speech, but just because you can say something doesn't mean you should.
You know, early in the program, we talked about why we've seen an increase in hate crimes and hate speech. One thing that we really haven't talked about is that there has been a rise, and maybe this goes back to what you're saying about Embolden, of at least we're seeing them more in public, of like white supremacist groups or racist groups. What factor do we play in that? I mean, for a lot of people, that's frightening.
It is frightening, and it should be frightening. These groups have become more visible. They are not just people who are meeting in basements anymore. They're connected through the internet. They're finding comrades and people with like-minded views all across the country, and they are in these online forums and egging each other on. You'll see one of the things that we report on every year is white supremacist propaganda. So you'll see Pennsylvania and New Jersey are very high areas for this. Stickers, graffiti, flyers left at places that have, they might look like they're red, white, and blue and look a little innocuous. And when you read the smaller print, they're about anti-immigrant, anti-LGBT, anti-Semitism, anti-Black. And they then they'll post it somewhere. They'll take a picture, then online. They'll feel good about it, and more people will do it. And they can meet online, and then they've been meeting in person, and they've been marching. You know, in Philadelphia around July 4th, we had a group of white supremacists march through Philadelphia. So again, they have been more emboldened. And I think since the Unite the White rally in Charlottesville a few years ago, people are becoming more aware of it. And we need to do education for young people who might be online, who might be attracted to this. We need to do education in our schools and really stand up as allies and talk about what's acceptable and what's not. And again, that's not a free speech issue. That's a matter of what's right and wrong. They do have free speech. We just have to counter it with better speech.
Shira Goodman is regional director of the Anti-Defamation League Philadelphia, which covers Eastern Pennsylvania, South Jersey, and Delaware. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, and thanks for covering this important topic.
And let me also add that we had a guest scheduled from the NAACP, Pennsylvania State Conference, who is unable to join us today, and we regret that that is the case. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar.